In many ways, the Gospel of John is the most sophisticated as a piece of literature. Certainly those very long speeches that they created, because several people apparently, as it went through various editions, wrote the Gospel, are quite remarkable. These great big speeches that Jesus gives after each of the signs that he worked. Huh? But even more sophisticated is the notion of irony, which pervades the Gospel of John. So Jesus talked to Nicodemus about being born again. He said, well, how can I be born again? I'm an old man. Or Jesus says to the woman at the well at Samaria, I will give you living water. Well, how are you going to get that? You don't even have a bucket. But over and over and over, John does this. And from the 12th chapter of the Gospel, which this reading is taken from, to the end, that irony reaches almost a breaking point. It's called the Book of Glory. And the word glory shows up over and over and over again. And it's used in a very subtle and, as I said, sophisticated way. What is the glory? Jesus talks about him being glorified, and the Father being glorified, and that glory is the same. Jesus is glorified by the fact that he is utterly faithful to the Father unto death. It's the same thing that Irenaeus of Lyon wrote when he said, the glory of God is the human being fully alive. And then, of course, God is glorified precisely by that life. So the glory of God and the glory of Jesus are the same in different manifestations. What does all this have to do with us? Well, in the midst of all this glory talk, we get this ferocious thing. Whoever loves his life will lose it. And unless the grain of seed fall into the ground and die, it will not bear any fruit. He's talking about us. Die to what? Die to all those dark places in ourselves that I talked about last week, which everybody has to see for herself or himself. Nobody else is privy to all those dark places. Although, parenthetically, when I was in the seminary, they taught us 4 years of moral theology and said, well, as a result of knowing all this stuff, you're going to be able to judge people's consciences when they come to confession. Well, after about 2 years, I saw that was quite nonsensical. You can't do that. You can't do that. It's impossible. I mean, we have a hard enough time judging ourselves. So, we're still left with this this kind of terrifying notion that if I love my life, I'm going to lose it. And that's where the notion of glory, I think, is helpful, because it calls for something that I think is really essential to the Christian life, namely a kind of conversion of one's imagination. Nietzsche has a book called A Transvaluation of All Values, and Nietzsche was hardly Christian. But that's exactly what we're talking about here in this reading, what John is talking about. In other words, what I think as successful, as glorious, in the normal course of things, is precisely turned upside down. To be glorious is to be truthful, to be courageous, above all, to be responsive to other people. In the next chapter, we have this astonishing scene, which, as I get older, becomes more and more critical to my understanding of the whole thing. Jesus washing the disciples' feet. In that gesture, we have epitomized the nature of the relationship that Jesus wants us human beings to have toward each other. Again, if you apply the category of glory to that, it certainly begins to look very strange. And it's precisely that strangeness, that improbability, that implausibility that we're called to. finally, you can say, well, where's glory found? The dead body bleeding from a cross. That's glory. And then God will take care of everything else after that.